This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hey, it's Anna Sale, and I want to thank you for listening to Death, Sex, and Money, where I explore the big questions and hard choices that are often left out of polite conversation. You can hear new episodes ad-free every week on Amazon Music, where you can find Death, Sex, and Money and all of your Slate favorites without the ads. The last email we got from you, you said, "I've had some fun this summer," with a wink emoji.
Well,
what's that mean?
You know, I was thinking about how the first time we talked, and I can't even believe that I said what I said, which is that I was looking forward to having lots of great sex, because that's kind of embarrassing. mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished. Fantastic. This is Death, Sex, and Money.
What happened today? Did he ask her out?
The show from WNYC about the things we think about a lot.
Oh, so now that you have a boyfriend, you're like above it?
And need to talk about more.
It's not a date. It's definitely not a date.
I'm Anna Sale. When I first talked to Vicky for our series all about dating this summer, she told me she was looking for great sex and another grand romance. She's 62, lives in the Bay Area, and has been divorced for 14 years.
There's a part of me that goes, well, you're getting older. Maybe you should lock some stuff down. But but I don't know. I waffle between wanting a one-on-one monogamous companion and also keeping things as they are, in which I have more freedom.
Because the thing is, at the end of this summer, Vicky is enjoying spending time with three different guys. Two she met online, one's younger and one's older. And things have heated up with a friend that she's known for years.
Just recently, he asked me if, you know, do we want to turn this into something? And I was kind of taken aback because I said, like, well, wait a minute. My younger man and my older man. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Because there's a part of me that goes, well, I want it all. And that seems greedy and selfish and horrible. And also, but wait, that's a possibility. So I think a lot of people might say, hey, that's not a bad position to be in. You have some choices here.
Dating is all about choices, whether to commit, how much time to spend on it, and when you're better off alone. This summer, we followed a group of 8 listeners as they navigated all of this.
Timing can be really, really rough.
I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
Dating is, like, pretty low priority, so if something has to go, it's going to be that.
Oh, it gets complicated.
At the end of this summer, a lot of them have figured out that what they want from dating is not always what they thought they wanted. Like Cece, who's surprised to find herself totally into a new boyfriend. She's 37 and lives in Sacramento. And at the beginning of the summer, she was going through the motions of online dating and ignoring guys who opened with nice tits. Then halfway through the summer, she met this new guy. But at first, she wasn't sure because he has 2 kids.
I just always thought that I would find someone who didn't have any and we would start fresh. And I don't know, those fantasies you have when you're younger and you're naive and you don't know any better about what it's like and where the feelings happen. So I said, well, I'm going to give this guy a chance and I'm going to call him. And I called him and it literally clicked from there. We talked for maybe 5 hours.
Wait, what?
Which is, that's a big thing because I hate being on the phone. I'm not a phone person. I'm like, unless someone's dying, why are you calling me?
The first time you talked on the phone, you talked for 5 hours?
Yeah, we talked from about 6 o'clock until 11. And we did that for the next 3 days.
Did you feel like a teenager?
Like that? A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. A little giddy. And he's a talker, so I get a lot of information.
well, you both are, apparently, 5 hours.
I'm fully aware that it's a little strange and weird, to the point where, like, he asked me, are you nervous about us meeting? And I told him, no, I've already claimed you as my husband.
When did you say that?
The first date. We had been talking for, like, I think 3 weeks by then, and we were going to meet up. And he was texting me, and he was asking, you know, hey, I'm on my way. Are you nervous about this meeting? And I said, not at all. I've already claimed you as my husband.
Wait, you texted that back before he showed up?
Yeah.
So you were not nervous.
I wasn't nervous at all. I don't know. I guess, you know, that thing that they say that I didn't think was really real, that I thought was kind of cliche, or like, when you know, you just know. I just knew.
But relationships don't always start with such certainty. When I first talked with Thomas, who's 26, he wasn't looking for anything serious. So he was alarmed when he found himself falling for an old friend a few months ago.
It felt like a rocky way to start something, to kind of fall into it by accident. But I think it's been going really well, and I've been really enjoying my time with her, and I think vice versa, I hope.
I mean, the worry you had at the beginning of dating this woman was that you weren't ready because you were still fairly recently out of a divorce and the end of a marriage that wasn't an easy end. How much have you talked about that in this relationship?
It has been the topic of conversation. We've gone in detail, but I just try not to dwell on it so much. I'm trying to make sure that my identity, the way that I see myself, is not as like, oh, I'm that divorced person who's trying to move on. Like, I'm trying to establish a different identity for myself. Does that make sense?
Totally makes sense. I had a period in my life when I, like, would jokingly refer to myself as a divorcee because I thought it was, like, a way to try to reclaim what felt embarrassing and pathetic. But it's interesting now to think of, like, oh, I did have a period where I really was and behaved like a divorcee. And now that feels like in the past, even though I'm still a woman who has been divorced.
100%. Yeah. Like I'm a different person because of it. But I don't think that it's my defining feature.
That doesn't mean Thomas is in a hurry to settle down again, even though he is feeling some pressure, not from the woman he's dating, but from his family.
I mean, just the other day, I was speaking to my grandfather, who's kind of frail lately, and the only question he had for me was, are you engaged yet? I had to make some joke about being engaged in lots of activities, but he didn't appreciate that.
Dan, the widower in Seattle, is not postponing commitment. He's in his early 40s, and he and his new girlfriend are moving in together and talking about kids. When we first talked this summer, Dan described his awkwardness trying to gauge consent in what feels like a new era in dating. But now he's discovered that isn't the hardest conversation he's had to have. It's talking about his wife, Kristen, who died just a year ago. Dan told me about a conversation he had with his girlfriend. He calls her Red, and she worries he's still too deep in grief.
She pointed out, I'm not done. And I'm never done. You're never done grieving, but I had hoped that I had it in stride, that I was processing it on my own time, that I had walled it off and separated it from the rest of my life, and not so much.
What did she notice that you hadn't quite noticed?
We were talking about names for a baby girl, and she had come up with some very good first names, and I said, well, what about Kristen for a middle name? And she said, oh, wait a minute, when you tell me that you want to name our first baby after your dead wife, that's a big thing. That's a big issue. And I thought about it from her perspective and thought, oh my gosh, she's right. And that scared me because I don't want her to think that I will always be mourning Chris and preferring Chris over her. That's not what I want to do.
Are there times when it feels okay to tell Red, your girlfriend, like, ugh, this is hitting me right now. I'm thinking about Chris because of this memory.
I honestly try not to, but there's always that tug. It's it's kind of like timelines blurring together in your head. It's I'm with Red and we're out doing things, and I think, oh, Kristen and I used to do these things. All of a sudden, I'm reliving this moment with Kristen in my head, and I have to hide everything that's going on so that Red doesn't see it, because I don't want her to know that I'm thinking about my late wife again. And I have to resolve the timeline. See, I'm here now. I'm with Red. That was the past. This is the present. I've got to move forward.
Coming up, June, the college student who's had a big summer of firsts, tries something else new.
I went and got coffee with a guy, and everything went well, and we ended up having sex afterwards. And after that, I kind of realized that I don't really like casual hookups.
We've been following this group of eight people as they've been dating, but we've also heard from a lot more of you, especially from single women. And you've told us it's tough out there right now.
I've been single in other periods of my life, and I just don't remember it being so bleak.
I am about to be an empty nester, and I'm just trying to figure out, how can I get back into the dating scene?
I actually used to have a group chat where we would exchange all of the unsolicited dick pics that we got on a regular basis.
The date was bad, just bad.
I'm not a pizza, and I shouldn't have to be at your house in 60 minutes or less before you unmatch me on Tinder.
Dating can be exhausting, and sometimes it's good to take a break. So we want to hear from you about fun that doesn't require a plus one. We've made an interactive Google spreadsheet where we can swap tips and celebrate the best parts of being on your own. Like, when I was single in New York City, I loved to go to double features by myself. I'd stop at Walgreens beforehand, buy myself a bag of trail mix, some chocolate, and a big club soda, and sneak all that into the theater. Share what you do when you're enjoying not being in a relationship. There's a link to that Google spreadsheet on our Facebook page and at our website at deathsexmoney.org. On the next episode, we revisit my conversation with Jane Fonda about many things, including when she was making the decision to leave her third husband, Ted Turner, after he cheated on her.
I felt like Virginia Woolf, only I had two angels in the house, one on one shoulder saying, oh, come on, Fonda, lighten up. You know, I mean, God, he's got 2 million acres of the most gorgeous land in the world, and he's funny, and he keeps you laughing. And on the other shoulder, there was an angel with a very soft whisper saying, Jane, you could stay with him and die married, but you'll die not being whole. And so I opted for the whisper.
Let me tell you a good story. It was late on a Sunday afternoon, and my family and I had been away and rolled into the driveway, and everyone was worn out from traveling and getting hangry. But waiting for us was a solution. A Hungry Root box filled with healthy, grabbable snacks and a few different dinner meals to choose from. We tore into this thing like a pack of wild animals and ate all the snacks. But they were healthy, whole ingredients, fresh produce. And then we were set for dinner a few hours later, which only took about 15 minutes to prep and cook and get on the table. I was so grateful to my past self for doing my current self this solid by ordering this box. And it was easy. I took a short quiz to tell Hungry Root what kinds of meat my family eats, the sorts of flavors we like, any dietary restrictions we have, or just things we're trying to avoid, and when I wanted the box to be delivered. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Death, Sex, and Money listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/DSM to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/DSM. And don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you.
Do you ever feel like there's nothing new in the news? You know there are urgent things happening in the world around you, but all you hear is noise. That's why we made What Next. Our goal is to tell you the stories you haven't heard before, or maybe a different side to the story you thought you already knew all about. I'm Mary Harris, the host of What Next. And I love my job because it helps me cut through the noise of the news. And then I get to bring it to you. Together, we can figure out what next.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Stahl. I'm Slate's jurisprudence editor. Ordinarily, I edit our courts and legal coverage from the comfort of my home office in Los Angeles. But for the next month and a half, I will be locked in a lower Manhattan courtroom with the rest of the press, a jury of 12 New Yorkers, Justice Juan Merchan, prosecutors, Trump's defense team, and the former president himself as history unfolds. I've temporarily moved myself and my family from Los Angeles to New York to cover this case firsthand, like I have done in other cases, including the Paul Manafort case, the Roger Stone criminal trial, and Donald Trump's first impeachment. I'm hoping that my background knowledge of the many, many criminal travails of our former president can offer something to you, Slate's listener. Over the next several weeks, you'll be hearing from me on Amicus, Slate's legal podcast, and in articles on Slate.com, from the jury selection to the opening arguments to the witness testimony and cross-examination and the prosecution's case and the defense's case, and ultimately to a final verdict. We will be providing you wall-to-wall coverage throughout the entirety of the trial as it unfolds from the courtroom. There's no way I'd be able to do it without the support of Slate Plus. So if you're not already a subscriber, please join today by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. Thank you so, so much.
I want to thank you for listening and for all your support as we at Death, Sex, and Money have made our move to Slate. Your stories, voice memos, and emails have meant so much to the team. As part of this transition, there's a new way to support our show financially at Slate, our new home, and you'll get something special in return. Subscribe to Slate Plus, and you'll not only support our work on Death, Sex, and Money, you'll get access to new benefits, including listening to us and all of the other great shows Slate makes, like Slow Burn and Decoder Ring, without any ads or sponsor breaks. To subscribe, just click Try Free at the top of the Death, Sex, and Money show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/DSM+ to get access wherever you listen. Thanks. This is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC. I'm Anna Sale. The first time I talked with June, who's 21, she'd never had sex with a guy. But this summer, she started seeing three different men at once, a primary partner and two other people, and became sexually active with all of them. And then she decided to turn off her dating apps. But recently, she went back on Tinder, and after matching with someone there, tried something else new, a one-night stand. She sent me a voice memo about it.
It wasn't like a bad experience at all. It just, I don't think I want to do that again, and it just makes me really appreciate the fact that I have multiple people in my life who I can have romantic relationships with, but who also really care about me. And like, it just hits me sometimes. Being polyamorous can be difficult, but it's also incredibly rewarding. So that's where I'm at right now. I just started crying. I just wanted to kind of record this moment.
What didn't feel good
after you'd had sex on this first date with this new person?
The way that it turned out, I guess, it wasn't like a bad experience. They were like a great person and the sex was fine. It was just, I emotionally didn't feel great about it afterwards. And I think it was just the idea that like after the date was over, I kind of felt like it wasn't, nothing was going to happen again with this person. And I did sex with them, but like we weren't really going to see each other again. And that, and it made it seem like that was kind of their plan from the beginning.
Did you stay the night?
No, they kind of kicked me out, which also, not that, you know, I needed to stay the night. I didn't want to really, but that didn't feel great. And I actually ended up spending the night with my primary partner afterwards and telling them about it. And they were really willing to listen to me.
Why'd you go back on Tinder?
I think that I was worried, or I am worried still, I guess, about once the school year comes, my primary partner being a lot busier with classes, and the other people that I'm seeing are working full time. And I think I was just worried that it would get lonely, but I think I'm still going to like keep going on dates and keep meeting new people, but probably just not have the sexual aspect with it like I was doing before when I wasn't having sex, where if we did end up going back to someone's, you know, apartment or house or whatever, I would tell them that honestly, that I wasn't going to have sex with them and it was always fine.
You decided you want to reinstitute that.
Yeah. And I had a feeling like I would want to keep that policy, but I think it was also important for me to at least try the casual hookup thing and not feel like shame over it. I just think that it's not personally like right for me.
Lewis, on the other hand, would kill for a casual hookup. He lives in D.C., and at the beginning of this summer, he told me about his frustrations at getting constantly ghosted by guys he matches with on dating apps. As the summer's winding down, he told me that hasn't changed.
A few weeks ago, I started talking to this guy on OkCupid, and we had actually gotten to the point where I had felt comfortable enough asking him out just for a cup of coffee, and I did, and of course, he completely ghosted. So
he just didn't respond.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, and that was about 2 weeks ago. Yeah.
How much time are you spending on dating apps right now?
You know, I'm not on them as frequently as I was before, just because, again, it's been very demoralizing, the whole process, and I've been trying to keep myself busy with other tasks, just not to think about it. And to be honest, like during the week, I don't really think about it much, you know, because I'm busy with work and, you know, other things. It's really like nights and weekends when I normally would be hanging out with people that I'm like, oh shit, another Saturday night at home by myself watching Hulu or Netflix or whatever. You know? Yeah.
What have you found, like, what's the thing that you do when you can feel yourself kind of slipping into like a kind of heavy mood about the things that you can't control in your dating life? What do you do when you feel that come on?
Take a walk with my dog. Uh-huh. Yeah, like exercise. You know, I've just kind of been focused more on me and going to the gym a lot, like swimming, you know, doing yoga and Pilates and different cardio stuff. I'm training for a half marathon in a couple of weeks.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I was talking to my friend, a good friend of mine the other day about this somewhat jokingly. I was telling her, like, maybe I'll try to date women just as a fun social experiment because straight women seem to love me.
Is that a serious thing or no?
No, probably not. I wouldn't know what to do.
So things have changed a little bit since we last talked. I'm currently very, very single.
This is Jessie, who lives in Montana.
The last time I talked with her, she was very not single. She told me midsummer that she was dating two guys who were in open relationships. But since then, both of those have ended. One of the men decided he needed a break from non-monogamy altogether. And she broke up with the other guy. But her decision had nothing to do with the fact that he's married.
You know, we're just really different in a lot of ways. And we ultimately just met up and had a drink and talked about some things. And I just said, you know, I just don't think it's working.
Mm-hmm. Are you still going on first dates?
I haven't been on one lately, but yes, I'm still, I suppose, in the process of potentially going on first dates. I don't feel bad about it. I don't feel great about it. It just is sort of the fact of where I'm at right now.
Are you indicating on dating apps that you're open to being part of open relationships and to non-monogamy?
Not currently. I am sort of maybe leaning toward a less complicated setup for the time being. My current conversations are all just one person without additional partners, at least to my knowledge. And right now it's feeling sort of nice to not really have a lot of complicated relationships going on in my life.
Are you noticing the extra time you have?
A little bit, yes.
Yeah. It's interesting. I can hear in your voice a slightly different tone than our previous conversations. There's like a lightness that just...
I kind of feel that way. That's interesting that you can recognize that. It does feel a little... Maybe it's a clean slate feeling, too, of just not being in any relationship. I'm not sure.
Out of all the people I talked to this summer, Miracle was the only one who started out not using dating apps. She's in her mid-20s and lives in her hometown in Alabama. But a few months ago, she tried Bumble for the first time. And just recently, a guy reached out to her on Facebook.
Usually I'm like, oh, creep, like not doing this. But we actually had a couple of mutual friends. And it's like, okay, you know, like he seems harmless. You know, sure, whatever, it's accepted his friend request. Uh-huh. And we've actually been talking for like the past week, and we're actually going to like get together and go on a date like within the next couple of days or so. But I've also come to terms with the fact that I feel like I have a lot going on in my life. I'm happy with those things, and I want somebody who will come in and I guess makes me want to slow down some.
One of the things Miracle has going on is applying to business schools for next year. And a lot of the programs she's looking at aren't local.
I think it'll be good for me to get away for a little bit and be able to focus on my sophomore.
How long have you been back home?
I have been back home a little over 2 years now, which I cannot believe, but yeah.
When we first talked, Miracle, we talked about the friends that you hang out with, mm-hmm. and you indicated that there was one person where there could be romantic potential. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. Oh, I do.
Did anything happen this summer there?
I mean, we pretty much text every single day. And it's kind of always in the back of my mind that it's there. And I don't know. I guess I can't write it off and say it's not playing a role in kind of my decision-making about where I might end up in the next year or two. Not that that'd be the only reason, but, and, like, he knows that, too.
He does?
Yeah.
Have you ever kissed?
Yes.
Recently?
Yeah.
Miracle, you have been withholding.
Oh, yeah, and how many people know? Not many. Not many at all.
So it's this open question.
Oh, yeah, definitely, because it just, you know, you don't want to make any drastic decisions because of a person when you both have goals that you're chasing, but also, you know, you don't want to just, like, shut something off and then years down the road, you know, have your what-ifs, which I know, you know, I think we'll always have those, but if you can keep yourself from having that, you know, why not?
miracle. I'm so interested to know what's going to happen for you in the fall.
Hey, I am too, Anna. I am too.
That's Miracle. After we talked, she sent us an email to say she did end up seeing that guy from Facebook. She took him to her church, and they really hit it off. Thank you so much to all of the listeners who let us follow along this summer as they've been dating. To go back and listen to the entire series, go to deathsexmoney.org/hotdates. And share your stories about the best parts of being single, what you're able to do when you're not planning around anyone else. A link to that Google spreadsheet is on our website at deathsexmoney.org. Death, Sex, and Money is a listener-supported production of WNYC Studios in New York. I'm based in Emeryville, California, at the studios of the investigative podcast Reveal. Our team includes Katie Bishop, Annabelle Bacon, Stephanie Joyce, Emily Botine, and Andrew Dunn. The Reverend John Delure and Steve Lewis wrote our theme music, and thanks to Hannes Brown for doing a special theme for this series. I'm on Twitter at Anna Sale, and you can find the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Death, Sex, Money. Even though they've only been together a month, Cece and her new guy aren't going on a lot of dates. They've already skipped ahead to the staying in phase of their relationship.
He'll come over and we play video games. He plays on one television and I'll play on my handheld system and we're good.
Side by side? You're not even playing the same game together?
No, we're playing two totally different games, two totally different systems.
I'm Anna Sale, and this is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC.